Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, exploit your wiggle room, part one. The questions this cast answers are, what are the limits of my role? What can I do when there's no corporate guidance? And how can I implement my ideas and plans? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
If you're thinking that you'd like to have the kind of power that will give you wiggle room to make the kind of changes that Mark's talking about in this podcast, maybe it's time to think about becoming an executive. And you're in luck, because we've just launched a new podcast, Executive Tools, all about the learning that you need to do and the understanding that you need to have in order to become an effective executive. Executive Tools is only available to our licensees, and it's just one of the benefits of our $200 a year license. Find out more by going to managertools.com and looking for license in the product dropdown.
Kate, most managers are really hesitant to make changes about how things are done in their individual parts of the organization early in their career. Mm-hmm. Now, they're hesitant because they don't know how much leeway they actually have. And they know that early on, at least, it's best not to make mistakes rather than taking risks. Unfortunately, we learn this reticence so well that when we later are giving increased levels of authority, we still defer excessively to our bosses. That makes us leaders in leaders' roles with a managerial mindset. What we don't know early in our managerial career is we have plenty of room to make things better.
And you should start practicing it now because it will benefit you in the future.
Yes.
So we're going to give you some guidance about how to practice it and hopefully help you to understand that it is part of your role and you can engage in these things and reduce some of the worry around it.
Yeah, totally.
So we're going to talk about how organizations sure seem like top-down worlds and your organization doesn't know what you're doing. Your boss probably doesn't know the details of what you're doing. You can make almost any change you want. Yes, you can be overruled, but it's more rare than you think.
Far more.
Yeah.
All right.
So organizations, they seem like top-down worlds. And actually, the genesis of this cast is from your friend, Trevor. Mm-hmm. Trevor Woods.
Trevor Woods.
He gave a presentation at our M Conference speaker series, which is ongoing and super fun. It's honestly, it's like a treasure trove of learning for me. And he's the CIO of the University of Sydney. And he shared his leadership lessons from when he was put in charge of the war room that was responding to the COVID crisis in Q1 of 2020. So, you know, Trevor's in this position. And y'all, education in terms of international students attending Australia universities is the fourth biggest export in Australia. It's huge. I mean, it's
huge.
Massive. So we're looking at not just, you know, his world and his role. We're looking at an economic impact to his continent, not to make Trevor sound any cooler, because he doesn't really need us for that because he's so cool. But there was fear that there could be a year or more of no international students attending or paying tuition. Mm-hmm. And that tuition represented 40% of the university's budget. And so Trevor had to step in. And without his boss, the COO's formal role authority, Trevor had to make hundreds of decisions, both in his area of information technology, and then more broadly across the whole organization. And it was an incredible success. I mean, he shared that story with us. Probably you should probably kind of tell more about the story, just because I feel like you know Trevor so well. You can give us like what happened.
The inside scoop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, to some extent.
Well, I mean, it's just so interesting. I think something that in North America, we don't consider is the proximity to the Asian countries that Australia relies on. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he talked about quite a lot in his M Conference speaker series call, was the fact that a lot of their international students are from China. Mm-hmm. And now what do we do? They had to adjust. They had to put down both, I want to say organizational rules, principles, both in terms of IT, the technology, but also being part of the war room, more broadly for the organization as a whole. Now, all of it turned out to be obviously incredibly successful. And he shared that they realized that there were going to need to be these guiding principles that they could live by. The second of which was that they would not create any guidance greater than that which the legal and health guidance suggests. Which seems weird and nonsensical, right? At first glance, you're like, okay, what an unnecessary principle. I mean, the restrictions were tight enough. We all lived through them, right? We're all like, yeah, it was pretty restricted. But the war room, and rightfully so, their biggest fear was that once the country came up with rules, and those rules that the country imposes have the force of law due to an emergency behind them, then the state, in this case, New South Wales, adds to that, either due to an abundance of caution or some less than noble political interest, adds their own layer. And then the university adds their own layer of restrictions, followed by individual departments adding their own layer of restrictions, and then individual professors adding their own layer of restrictions. You can see where this leads.
I mean, you wouldn't to a good space. Be able to breathe to the left.
Yeah.
It's just
exactly.
You know, and there's comfort and people make rules based on their comfort level. And as much
that's
as
all that, different.
Yeah. And as much as some of that went, you know, in terms of like one direction, it's also, it's in this case, they were worried that it would be more restricted. It's happened in a lot of places, in countries and states, municipalities, right? Individual businesses with this cascading and increasingly restrictive building kind of rules and guidance leading to what some people might say are well-meaning and perhaps unnecessarily strict, you know, situations, which therefore have dampening effects on the economy, right? Like we're in a position where, hey, all of this stuff has made it so that we cannot create an environment where the economy continues to be successful. And so, you know, they thought that increasing the strictness of protocols down to that lowest level can make even the simplest things difficult. And that because of the different departments and professors and things like that, it would make a complicated experience for people. And maybe counter to their intention, which was to be serving everyone well.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really feel like a service environment. At some point, I mean, it got to the point where Trevor's War Room at the University of Sydney was responsible, again, for keeping the university as open as they could. They had to go as far as empowering janitors across the campus to literally rip off the walls and throw out any sign that insisted on or threatened enforcement of any rules that were more stringent than those already put into place by the government. And janitors did this just that. I mean, no one else is in a better position. They're in all of the rooms and hallways. They just said, take them down.
Also, I can only imagine like a campus that big that you'd, if you are in a specific department, you could might not even see the signs. I mean, I remember when I was at university, there was a whole set of buildings that I still to this day have never entered. And if, gosh, I can only imagine just one side of the school is doing one thing, one half of the school is doing another, and you're just, you're in a bad spot there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how big I imagine the campus of the University of Sydney is quite large.
Oh, square miles, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I would imagine.
Yeah, I assume it's really big.
It's too big to traverse, to walk around and look for signs. Yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
Far too big. Yeah, absolutely.
So the point of the story, which, I mean, honestly, okay, we would be sharing it just because it's cool. And that's not why. The point of the story is that the mindset of overregulation, in our experience, is akin to what managers feel is happening above them in their companies, usually larger organizations. So that idea of overregulation is what managers feel is happening to them. Managers are arguably justifiably nervous about being seen, if we're keeping our Australian theme going, as the tall poppy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I don't want to be the one who stands up and does the thing.
Right.
And again, y'all, if you want to be a leader, leaders are the tall poppy. So
yeah,
you know, that I love that analogy. So this is just a time when someone made the right choice and they did it standing head and shoulders above everybody else. And they did it without being told you're allowed to do this. And it was the right call. It's the right choice.
Exactly. And I think as individual managers, we might think to ourselves, well, that's such a huge example. That's so big and so strategic. I'm not going to be put into that position. Or that's a single moment in time. That kind of thing doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. But think for a moment here about the number of requests for data, for reports, for recommendations on what to do and how to do it. The requests that your department receives that everyone understands are demands. The suggestions that are made to you that every manager knows are commands.
Mm-hmm.
And those staff departments like legal, human resource, finance, accounting, facilities management, IT, they're asking for information and they're citing the level of some executive that they report to in order to invoke for themselves a level of role power that they themselves do not possess. Now, compare those to the requests for ideas or opportunities to bubble up and share best practices. The former outnumber the latter by orders of magnitude.
Which is why you get that impression that your organization is a top-down place. Mm-hmm. So that impression—
Be mandated.
Yeah, that impression is being fed to you every single day.
Yeah, definitely.
And you'll notice that the people above you ask for stuff directly in a broadcast email, but you can't do the same thing.
Uh-huh. You can't ask. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you can't go up.
It's a one directional.
In fact, they can ask hundreds of managers to engage in some reporting, but to get them to do what you need, you have to fill out a trouble ticket or an online form or go through, you know, a bunch of different layers of approval to find out who the person who's responsible for helping you. It's not even that you have to go through those levels to get to that person. It's that once you get to that level, then they'll tell you who you're allowed to talk to.
Exactly. Okay, yeah. This is the person that can assist 4 months later.
Yeah, this is the person whose job it is to provide the service. And that person, by the way, who is supposed to offer that service doesn't advertise the service. They don't build relationships. They don't remind managers that they're there to help. They don't reach out. I mean, your team members need stuff you can't get because you don't even know who the right person is and that person's not telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes, your organization feels like a top-down environment and it's treating you as if you are in a top-down environment.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. A really easy, simplistic real-world example for this is if you're a manager, in the federal government of the USA, it's very likely that you believe panel interviews are a requirement for all hires you make. We talk about this all the time, Kate, in our Effective Hiring Manager conference.
Yep.
I mean, we don't talk about panel interviews. Why? Because we don't recommend panel interviews.
Terrible.
But there's a manager in the room every time who says, but I have to do panel interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we only have the data specifically on one of these organizations, that is the US government. We have got managers, and you're listening to this, who believe that panel interviews are a requirement. And your belief is patently false. It is not true. Wendy and Mark have downloaded a copy of the OPM guidelines, OPM being Office of Personnel Management, and it does not say anywhere in there that panel interviews are a requirement. It's true that the OPM recommends them, but that's not what your HR associate's going to tell you. They're going to tell you that this is how they do it because of OPM. And they use their only referential power to force you to do panel interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't know that the data show that candidates consider just two interviewers in a room to be a panel. They don't know The candidates hate panel interviews. They don't know that the outcomes are negatively skewed in terms of prediction accuracy or likelihood of closing offers, but they're going to continue to enforce a rule that doesn't exist while carrying the weight of OPM behind them.
Yeah, you know, and having worked at an organization for a long time that was both quite large and involved in governmental contracting, I can tell you that not only did I bump up against this rule, I also found myself bumping up against a lot of rules where I was kind of told that it was the rule and then discovered, in fact, it really wasn't the rule, but the person, you know, above me or even the person to my peer level was like, well, you know, this is what the other people did before. Like, it's just kind of an inherited set of behaviors. And I discovered that if you're willing to try, now look, I'm pretty willing, you know, to get told, hey, that wasn't the right answer. Like, you're in trouble, go back and fix it. I'm a little probably on, well, I'm saying that to you. You're even further on that spectrum, probably, in terms of like, well, I'll try it. And if I get in trouble, I get in trouble,
right?
Whatever.
Let's see if my hand gets slapped. Right. Who knows? Yeah.
So we were required to do status reports. And I didn't do a status report every single week for, I think, like 5 months. And to be fair, I wasn't just like doing nothing. I was working on kind of this like pet project where I was working on a like data collation tool in a very specific set of software. And if you're listening to this and you know about the systems requirement management software called DOORS, you can imagine the data that I was working on. And what's funny is that little pet project turned out really great. And it ended up saving us like 3 to 6 months on some stuff that we were working on. And when they asked me, how did you have time to do this? And I told them I wasn't doing a status report. They were a little cheesed at me.
Which, okay. But who noticed that it was missing?
No one.
Anybody?
No one.
So it was super important then that nobody noticed in 5 months. Really important. Thank goodness you were spending time on that.
Also, too, they didn't make me go back and do them all, obviously, right?
Obviously.
So we've told, like, and there's a similar situation here with panel interviews. We've told many managers over the years who are required, right?
Mm-hmm.
They think they're required to do panel interviews to acquiesce and then quietly conduct individual interviews and use the results of the individual interviews, do their best to ignore the silly panel interview results, and it's successful. Okay, so in this status reports, panel interviews, you have to find out if those are actual requirements. Is it a shall statement? Just for our DOORS people out there. There's a lot, you know, of just kind of stuff out there that it feels very much like it's kind of this pressure from the top. And among all of these pressures, the discerning manager would learn an important political lesson very quickly. Keep your head down, right? You learn that. Like, don't act like you have power because you don't, not really. Don't do stuff that others aren't doing. Surely if this idea you had were a good idea, somebody else would have done it.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, someone else would have done it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone else, you know, they would be doing it currently.
Mm-hmm. Somebody has tried it.
But it got overruled.
It was weeded out. It didn't work or
didn't go well.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us do that to ourselves. We think, oh, I have this idea.
Oh, definitely.
Obviously, if this was a good idea, someone else would be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been duped.
Yeah, basically.
We've learned the wrong lesson, as the saying goes, out of an abundance of caution.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned the political lesson.
Yeah.
And not the lesson that we probably, which I believe is more valuable, which is the effectiveness lesson. The average manager grossly overestimates the extent to which the company or department or school mandates what he or she does or limits the choices that he or she has. You have many, many choices. More than you believe that you do. And this is where this in the space between what is actually mandated and what we believe is mandated is our wiggle room.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Is your wiggle room. We actually, as managers, again, All of this to say, you don't know what's there, but it is. And in fact, you actually have more than just wiggle room. I mean, you probably have cartwheel room, but we're choosing the wiggle room term to remind you that you're going to get a lot further not advertising these changes that you're making in your team, its processes, systems, meetings, metrics, reporting, workflows, whatever it is that you're looking at adapting, changing, tweaking. It's just a really good survival mechanism to be aware of the political powers above you. But you can't let those political powers, their control over you, those restrictions, limit you completely. You have wiggle room. You have more than wiggle room, but let's use our wiggle room.
Yeah, absolutely.
If what stands between you and an executive role is an interview, then you're also in luck. We've made permanent the addition of the interviewing series to the personal license. So for the same $200 a year, you'll also receive access to the 70 plus podcasts which go into the interviewing series. It's everything you need to know from preparation to follow up to accepting an offer. And if you implement the guidance, you won't lose offers because you weren't prepared or communicating enough. In fact, if other people's experience is anything to go by, you'll have more offers than you know what to do with.
Listen, y'all, part of this is because your organization doesn't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Your company, your governmental department, your university doesn't have a clue how you're managing your team. Mm-hmm. Many people at the top of your organization making requests for data and reports have never managed anybody.
Nope.
They don't know how, or even if you do one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. They assume your team gets as much feedback as they do, which isn't much.
Not very much.
You're lumped in with all of the other managers. And the only time that the people above you know, and worse, care,
yeah, care
about whether or not you're coaching someone is if it's late stage coaching.
Uh-huh.
And the lawyers are involved and making sure that whatever you do won't come back and bite the organization in the form of a wrongful termination lawsuit. They're not fully aware. I mean, ask yourself, how will you know what's going on up there? You probably don't have a big sense. You think of it as kind of a global level. You don't think so much. You don't know, you know, in 1 or 2 hour increments how the people are spending their time. And most organizations, for example, they have a sense of their retention and turnover numbers. And those are gross numbers. They don't know what your number is.
Right.
Think about that for a minute. Either they have your data and they're only sharing a gross number, or they don't have the data from individual managers and are sharing only the number they have. Now, if they have your data, why wouldn't they share it? Why wouldn't they share it with you, right? There's a rule that if you gather data from someone, they're entitled to the results of the analysis. So either they have it and they're not sharing it. Wow. If they don't have your data,
Wow.
Wow. A friend of mine, her daughter, she says, wow, 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 wow. Like, always thinking about that. Like, that's my response to them having your data and not sharing it.
Yeah.
And if they don't have your data, you're likely to be asked to engage in retention efforts based on pockets of high turnover in the company. So you're being asked to engage in behavior based on other people's situation. And in this analogy, other people's problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if your retention's stellar. And you've been doing your one-on-ones and you have a great degree of relationship power and trust and you feel put upon, and we know you do, you're still going to be asked to, whatever, throw a beer bash or offer retention incentives or brief everybody on all the cool new benefits the company's rolling out, because it doesn't come down to you as the individual. You're lumped into a larger gross number.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, a couple of levels above you in your organization, and most definitely among virtually all of the staff member. To go a step further, beyond just retention numbers, almost no one can say whether you met your goals last year.
Oh, man, that's a bummer.
They're not even sure, to be honest, what goals were given to you by your boss. So how would they know whether or not they achieved them, right? Now, the one person that might know would be your VP, who perhaps in the most well-managed companies, has to compile that data for succession planning meetings that maybe him and the business partner have on an annual basis.
Right.
So usually the data comes from a request from the VP to all of the directors and senior managers asking questions about top and bottom performers. They don't know if you hit your goals.
They don't know what your performance review looked like 2 years ago. And if they did, they'd probably discount it because the system has changed.
Yes, it probably has. You're right.
You know, what's frustrating is the purpose of the online input system for those reviews was built not for your ease, like the individual manager's ease of use or ease of input or anything like that, but for their ease of access. So it's like, I would like to see the output. So I'm going to make it harder for the person putting in the input. Mm-hmm. But listen, they don't refer to it before meeting with you. I can tell you
that. They can easily access it, but they're not looking at it.
I can't tell you how many times in my previous role, I had to fill out my portion of my performance review weeks in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the finalized version until maybe like an hour before the meeting. So the whole day, right? I'm sitting at my desk. The meeting's at 3. It's noon and I don't have the review and I am just terrified. And listen, I was a top performer. This isn't like, oh, I'm worried. No, I knew I did my job. Mm-hmm. I knew I did it well.
Yeah.
And I was in a matrix, so there was some, you're not always working with people who are contributing really heavily. Right. It's tough. But man, I remember not getting that review. And when it was my turn, you better believe you don't have to wait to get your review for me until the day of.
Right.
Like, because that's the scariest thing in the world.
Ever.
But if the person who's supposed to give it to you doesn't even send it to you until right before the meeting, or you walk in and they hand it to you, which is even worse, I can promise you that anybody above you, VPs, whatever, anybody above them who's not your individual manager, they don't know. They've never seen it.
Yeah. They just don't know. So what we'd recommend you do here, guys, or the thing is, when you become a director or a senior director or whatever it may be, and you get that random broadcast email for data that seems overly burdensome, we'd suggest you don't just turn around and forward that thing to your team expecting them to do the work. Instead, hang on to it for a little bit. Tap the brakes and don't do anything about it initially. I mean, see if you get in trouble. What's the worst that could happen? I mean, if it's truly urgent, somebody's going to follow up on it, right?
Honestly, yes. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if nobody comes back to you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if nobody's tracking what responses we... Listen, if it's important, we've got a sheet of everybody that went to whether or not it got done, got sent back. And if they're not doing that, it's not important enough. And how do you know the person above you who's sending it to you didn't just get it from the person above them?
Right. Exactly. Now, we know that to some of the people out there, just simply ghosting and not replying to a request is a little bit too Machiavellian.
Nothing
for
is
your
too
tastes.
Machiavellian for Sarah and I.
Yeah,
so.
Well,
but we know you're out there.
We know you're out there.
Yeah.
So what we would suggest you do then is hopefully you've got a friend at the staff level that you can go to and find out more about the request. So if it's coming from HR, let's say, you can go to a trusted confidant at the staff level in human resources, call them, ask, hey, how big a deal is this latest request? Tell them, I'm just calling to check, offer them anonymity, and tell them that your team is just really busy. So you're trying to figure out the importance of this latest request. And just see what they say.
You never know.
Yeah, they might just tell you, yeah, no, it's not even a big deal. Don't worry about it. This is just the thing of the week. They'll get over it. They really don't need it. They're just asking. This is a cookie cutter. Don't worry about it. You don't need to do it. It's fine.
Right.
Which speaks to building relationships. I mean, having a trusted business partner helps in this respect.
In our experience, having a trusted business partner helps in all respects. So you should get some.
All respects, yeah. Definitely. That's all for this week, folks. We'll continue this cast next week.